everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Or should I say, howdy, everybody. I don't know.
For a second there, I thought you were going to say, my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Or shall I say, howdy doody. I don't know.
Well, you have to be of a certain age to remember Howdy Doody.
Well, but, yeah, I was one of the kids that was watching Howdy Doody on the black and white TV screen after we got out of school in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Well, after a too hot for me October, Tom, this November is absolutely delightful.
You know, and we're getting these reports that Snow Bowl up in Flagstaff has opened its earliest snow season in
what?
It's history.
They're making snow up there?
Yeah, they will. They had a good snowfall, and with the snowmaking apparatus that they have, they've been open since last weekend.
Wow.
And they were planning to be open every day.
Very nice.
So now, and we're having these temperatures that are, in some cases, a little below normal here lately.
Right, right.
I'm wondering, are we going into some sort of a temperature swing? The hotter summers and even colder winters of some kind?
I hope that is not the case, but we'll have to ask our climatologist, Zach Guido, when he's on next. But it does kind of feel that way, that like we're going to have summer till November 1, May 1 to November 1, and then we're going to have a cold winter from
when winter makes its appearance. It does so with relish.
Because I hate covering all my plants and all that, and I really hope it's not. I mean, I'll go up, you know, I don't mind down to about 32, but colder than that, no thanks. It's Buckmaster, November 13th, 2024. We'll begin our 15th year with our radio show. In January, we come to you from the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station, one of five under one roof, 1030 KVOI The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk on the radio. Worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. Also, all of our podcasts are available there as well. When we do our telephone interviews and we're going to do two telephone interviews today. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's begin with District 1 Pima County Supervisor, Democrat Rex Scott, who has just been elected to a second four-year term on the Pima County Board of Supervisors, beating for the second time Republican Steve Spain. Supervisor Scott, congratulations.
Bill, thank you very much. I really enjoy these monthly visits with you and Tom and your listeners, and delighted that we'll be able to do it for four more years.
Yeah, we will be. What took so long? Why is this vote count taking so long? And I think there's about 40,000 outstanding votes to be counted, or ballots to be counted. That won't impact your race. The only one that might be impacted is the sheriff's race, which is now like within 1,500 votes.
That's correct on both counts, Bill. There's a little over 40,000 votes countywide that need to be counted, and you gave the approximate margin of the difference between Sheriff Nanos and Lieutenant Lappin's votes. The reason this takes so long, not just in Pima County, but in Arizona, is that there are a significant number of people who are on the early voter list who do not mail their ballots in time to be part of that first drop of ballots at 8 o'clock on election night. Instead, they hang on to them, and they either get mailed in late. The votes that get announced on election night at 8 o'clock are the ones that come in on or before Saturday before election day. So everything that comes in the mail after that, and the biggest chunk, is the ones that get dropped off at vote centers. That was, I believe, right around 105,000 ballots just in Pima County that were dropped off at vote centers by people who were on the early voter list. So that's the biggest reason, because they have to be the signatures on the ballot envelopes have to be verified by the recorder, and then the recorder sends them over to the elections division to be tabulated. I think there were over 400,000 such ballots dropped off at vote centers in Maricopa County. And that's the unless there is some change in state law, and there was an interesting article in the Star last week about the pros and cons of making that change, where there are some legislators who'd like us to do what Florida does and say that, hey, if your early ballot isn't in by a certain date, then you have to vote in person. But there were also some comments from the Secretary of State about what that would mean for additional vote centers and additional equipment. So there are pros and cons, but that's the reason it's taking this long.
We mentioned Sheriff Nanos, his pre-election actions against his Republican rival, Heather Lappin, a jail commander, and Aaron Cross, the leader of a union in the sheriff's department, who is a critic of the sheriff. Those actions have caught the attention of you and your colleagues. Could you articulate the action that was taken yesterday, please?
So yesterday, Supervisor Hines had an item on the agenda that called for us to formally censure the sheriff for putting Lieutenant Lappin and Sergeant Cross on administrative leave for actions that he says were in violation of departmental policy, and in the case of Sergeant Cross, in violation of the federal Hatch Act. And Supervisor Hines was told by our chief deputy county attorney, Sam Brown, who is the chief civil deputy in the county attorney's office and advises the board, that we do not have any legal right to censure another elected official, and that that could actually open up the board to some kind of legal action if we took that step. So instead of debating the original item that Supervisor Hines had placed on the agenda, he, after hearing from Mr. Brown, offered a substitute motion, which was to simply call on both the Arizona Attorney General and the U.S. Attorney for our state to consider investigating whether or not the sheriff violated any laws. Now, both those legal offices could decline to make any kind of investigation, but the board voted unanimously to ask the county administrator to have them review the matter and determine if there needs to be an investigation.
Did the sheriff, was he in attendance during this action?
He was not, but he did send a document that was attached to the item that in response to everything that was in the original item. So we certainly knew his position. He and I believe he said after the meeting that he welcomed any kind of investigation. In fact, he had said that he was turning the matter over to both the Attorney General and the FBI. So he was already planning to involve outside entities in what he felt were the inappropriate actions of his two employees.
I do want to mention the other item of note. There was a busy agenda yesterday concerning wildlife in the Santa Cruz River. Could you articulate that for us?
So we entered into a memorandum of understanding with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and what it is, and this is following actions that were taken by Santa Cruz County and by the city of Tucson, where we're moving forward to protect riparian habitat along the Santa Cruz River. And so there are going to be certain projects that are going to be taken on by the federal government, and certain projects that are going to be taken on by our Regional Flood Control District. As I said, there were similar memoranda of understanding that were entered into with the federal government by the city and by Santa Cruz County, because really we all have an interest in preserving that riparian area, and the federal government has an equal interest. So we're excited, and the board asked if we could get a copy of the plan of the plan to execute the memorandum of understanding, so that we know what the county is going to be doing, what the federal government's going to be doing. There are also annual reports that are supposed to be issued on the joint work that's going to be done, and we ask to see copies of those annual reports as well.
When we return with Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott, what changes can we expect in Pima County with new leadership in Washington? We'll ask Supervisor Scott about that. Also, perhaps an update on RTA next. But right now, Supervisor, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town. Where has this year gone? Already, we've got Thanksgiving now, 2 weeks from tomorrow. So people are putting in their orders with Mona's Danish Bakery for particular desserts. What would you like to see on your table, Supervisor Scott, for you and your lovely family on Thanksgiving?
Well, Bill, when I was an impulsive and impetuous teenager, I once had a bet that if I drank an entire bottle of hot sauce, this girl that I knew would make me a chocolate cream pie. And I think in honor of that rather silly act during my adolescence, that I would ask the good folks at Mona's to make us a chocolate cream pie.
They would certainly do it. And Tom's giving you a thumbs up because that is his favorite Thanksgiving dessert. Mona's
Danish. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is.
That's great.
You got a big thumbs up there on the other side of the glass. Mona's is, of course.
Would he drink an entire bottle of hot sauce for one?
I don't know if Tom would do that. Not with his particular, his constitution at this point in his life. I don't think he could handle it. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Put in your pie order. I'll be putting in an order for a dozen dinner rolls as I attempt to actually do the Thanksgiving dinner this year, having for five people at the Buckmaster Bungalow. So this is going to be a very interesting Thanksgiving for me. Last Thanksgiving, folks were so nice. They brought over Thanksgiving to me, but this time they're coming and they're expecting me to prepare the meal. So that'll be interesting. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. More with Rex Scott after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority annually contributes over $100 million to regional transportation improvements to supplement limited federal and state funds. This critical funding source provides funding for nearly two-thirds of our region's needed transportation improvements through its 2006 voter-approved half-cent sales tax. To review and comment on the RTA's new draft plan, visit rtanext.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson gardeners trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Since I took Veterans Day off, it's one of those weeks for me where it feels like Tuesday, but it's actually Wednesday. So that means tomorrow's Thursday, and we'll be doing our monthly look at Tucson International Airport and air service. Then Friday, the Friday Focus interview, Dan Scheer is going to be coming up from Green Valley. Dan and I will talk with Jan Lesher, the Pima County Administrator. She'll be with us in studio. But right now we go back on the live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, to the newly reelected Pima County Supervisor, Democrat Rex Scott, who represents me in District 1, where I live here in Pima County. He's one of five board members, and all of the board, the incumbents, have won reelection. One thing I didn't mention, Supervisor Scott, backed it up. There are over 40,000 votes still to be counted, but the question is that going to be wrapped up, do you think, today?
When Ms. Lesher was talking with the board yesterday, she indicated that we would be done today.
Okay.
We have the county's elections division has until Friday to get all of the votes counted so that they can prepare the canvas that needs to be presented to the Board of Supervisors. And under state law, we have to approve that canvas on or before the 21st. And we have a special board meeting scheduled for the morning of the 21st to do just that.
All right. Will there be some changes? And I'm sure there will be, with new leadership in Washington or Republican administration, specifically concerning immigrants and the border and how Pima County has received federal funding to care for immigrants. What's your feeling on that, Supervisor Scott?
Well, I think it's a little too early to say, Bill, given that we're just entering the transition period between the Biden administration and the second Trump administration. But I'd ask your listeners to remember that the migrant influx of legally processed asylum seekers began in 2019, which was when President Trump was in the third year of his first term. And we were getting federal funds to deal with legally processed asylum seekers during the 48 to 72-hour period that they're in Pima County as early as that time. And the big reason for that is because there have been no changes to federal immigration policy since, the Reagan administration. And so the impact on border counties like ours and the need for federal funds to deal with the ramifications of federal immigration policy began under the Trump administration, continued under the Biden administration. We have had good partnerships with Senator Kelly's office, Senator Sinema's office, Representative Ciscomani and Grijalva's offices. Senator-elect Gallego will be replacing Senator Sinema in January, but he is certainly aware of the situation at the border. So all members of our federal delegation who have been in office or are coming into office are aware of the situation that border counties like ours confront. And until there is some change in federal immigration policy, we're going to need support from the federal government, because the board, and we're unanimous on this, will never vote to use local funds to pay for the cost of dealing with the ramifications of federal immigration policy.
Let me ask you, the listening sessions have begun. The public is hearing about the Regional Transportation Authority's next plan, and it is called RTA Next, and you represent on the RTA board. You represent Pima County. How are the sessions going? What are you hearing?
Well, I haven't attended one yet, but I am going to one next week at Sabino High School, which is in my district, on the 21st. What we know is that as soon as we get a sense of what the public feels about this draft plan, is that the board is going to have to revisit it and make any revisions or additions based on what we're hearing from the public. But we're also going to have to revisit the discussion amongst the nine of us. The vote to move the draft plan into public review was not unanimous, and we want to take into consideration all the concerns of each member jurisdiction before we send something to the ballot. We did vote unanimously to set the election for the month of November in next year. So once we come out of public review, we're going to have to consider what we heard from the public and also what are the remaining concerns of member jurisdictions. And a big chunk of that, Bill, is we need to get a better sense of what the cost will be to complete the remaining projects in RTA 1. We moved four projects to RTA Next, thinking that that would leave us sufficient revenue to complete the other projects in RTA 1. But because of increased costs for labor and materials that have really spiked as we've come out of the pandemic, that's not the case. And the board has been, quite frankly, frustrated with the fact that we've not been able to get an accurate number of what the cost to complete RTA 1 projects are going to be. And that is a source of concern and frustration for all nine of us.
Will the four projects be completed one way or another, Supervisor Scott?
Yes.
They will be.
Unequivocally, yes. When we moved them to RTA Next, we said unanimously that even if RTA Next failed, that we would use any combination of local and state and federal funds to make sure that all projects in RTA 1 are completed. So, yes, absolutely.
And what is the timetable? You said the election would be November of next year. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
So the clock's ticking here. So we're now into the 1 year away.
It is, and the public review period is going to continue into the early part of 2025, and then the board is going to have to consider what we heard during public review, most likely into the spring and early summer, and then begin a campaign for whatever it is we put on the ballot, a final version for November of 2025.
Just before we wrap it up for your monthly visit, some of your thoughts on this election cycle. How was it for you mentally and physically during these events are very stressful?
You know, Bill, I feel really blessed to be able to do this work. I have been involved in public service since I was 24 years old, when I was the youngest person elected to city council in my hometown in Ohio. And then I had a 3-decade career working as a teacher and an administrator in our public schools, and got elected to the board in 2020, and am blessed and humbled to have another term. I think when you stay focused on all the good that you can do in these jobs and the service that you provide to the people that you represent, it really makes any of the noise or stress of a political campaign much easier to deal with. And I'm just very honored that the voters of District 1 have chosen me to represent them again for another 4 years. And I frankly found the campaign to be energizing, and that's because I tried to keep my focus and the focus of our volunteers and supporters on what we thought was a solid record of service and outreach and common sense decision making.
And in final seconds, you are reachable, and your office, what's the best way to reach District 1?
You can reach us by phone at 520-724-2738, or you can reach us via email by District 1, that's the number 1, at pima.gov.
All right. Congratulations again on your reelection. Gotta go. Thanks, Supervisor.
Thank you, Bill.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. They're ready for the holidays over at Green Things. Can you believe they grew 20,000 poinsettias? So they're ready for your holiday table and for your holiday decorating over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road, right by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. While you're over there, check out their sister business on site, on the 13-acre site. It's called Zocalo Village. And they have wonderful holiday items imported from all over the world. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, we use our live line provided by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line to Nancy Young Wright, former Arizona lawmaker, animal welfare advocate, the board president of the animal welfare group known as Rescue Me Marana. And we want to talk with Nancy Young Wright about this state law that forbids cities from regulating pet stores. The Arizona Republic, in an editorial, said it is an abject failure at protecting animals and consumers. It's about time we repeal it. And it says that Arizona allows so-called factory farms for dogs, and cities are powerless to stop them. Nancy, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, I'm doing well, Bill. Good morning. Thanks for having me on your show. And I couldn't have said it any better than you just quoted that article or that editorial from saying it. Here in Arizona, we are very concerned and have been concerned since a bill known as Senate Bill 1248 passed back in 2016. And since then, we've tried as animal welfare advocates to get a hearing on bills to repeal it and simply return our local control, but we haven't been able to get a hearing on a bill in all that time. So I have been talking with other animal welfare advocates, and folks might be interested in knowing what we think about this current election results and what we're looking at going forward with this law. Is that a direction you'd like to head to talk about that?
That is exactly the direction I want to go in, because I want to know, and my listeners want to know, when is this nonsense going to stop?
Well, we are facing a very powerful lobby of folks who are on the side of keeping profits going into their pockets. Basically, it's a business importing these puppies from all over the country, basically on semi trucks and vans. They roll into Arizona frequently, weekly, if not more frequently. These puppies are coming in here sometimes underage, put together and stressed on these vehicles, and they're going into, you know, big facility in Phoenix and being distributed to a couple stores in Phoenix and down here in Tucson. We now have two stores in Tucson that I consider to be working with puppy mills. There is no legal definition of what a puppy mill is, so stores can say we don't work with them. We don't work with puppy mills, but to us, we say that anyone who's selling an animal in a store like that is not what we'd call a responsible breeder. A responsible breeder wants to meet you, Bill, and show you the mom and the dad, and doesn't breed their animal repeatedly without, you know, all the care you'd like to see it have. So getting back to what just happened, it is more important than ever for folks to stay in touch and, well, to learn who their state senators and legislators are and to be in touch with them. It is going to be more of a challenge due to the results, but I want to be sure listeners know we need their participation more than ever. The state Senate looks like 16-14 Republican to Democrat. The House, the number I have is 32-28 Republican to Democrat. And it's important to note that that bill was passed on a Republican partisan basis in 2016. But we have wonderful friends on that side of the aisle. I want to name off a couple of them, if I may. Senator John Kavanaugh.
Sure. Yeah,
Senator T.J. Shope, who's closer to home to us here. Kavanaugh's Fountain Hills. Senator Shope has been a strong advocate for different kind of common sense animal welfare bills, and he's just north of the Pinal County line. And then we have State Senator Lauren Cuby coming in. She's former City of Tempe Council member, and she's very familiar with the challenges of enforcing that bill because it basically can't be enforced. We've shown that in Tempe and down here in Tucson. And every time you have to call in somebody from PAC to look at what's going on or somebody from whoever they call in Maricopa County, you're taking resources away and costing taxpayers money that could be spent somewhere else helping us. And we also have a state senator who is from Legislative District 18. I may have a hard time pronouncing her name, Bill, so you may have to help me. Mm. It's State Senator Priya Sundaresha? Am I getting it close?
I think, yeah, you're close. Yeah.
All right. Well, she's our new Senate Minority Leader, and she's an attorney, and she's proven to be a strong supporter. So I think you always have to have hope. And then perhaps the most important thing that voters just did across the state is they rejected attempts put in by the legislature last year to weaken, if not almost do away with, our voter initiative process. Voters said no. So I think that's something really important for listeners to know, that we still have that intact. And here's an example of when it's worked. 50 times people tried to run bills for 50 years, Bill, to stop cockfighting in Arizona. 50 times it failed. It was passed through voter initiative. Now, it's true it was passed when it was a lot less difficult than it has been made to pass it. But we have that intact. And I think that speaks well of voters in Arizona. They don't want people to take that right from us.
Nancy Youngwright, I just don't understand why a city shouldn't have the right to stop something like this. But that law, I guess, pretty much handcuffs council people.
It does. It's a little easier when you tell people what happened over in Bisbee. They have a hard time with this puppy mill law. They don't understand it because it just kind of blows their mind. They say, what do you mean we can't stop the sales if we want to? And I said, well, it's called a preemption bill. And the state legislature listened to the pet store owner who said, I want you to do this. And they brought forward a law from Ohio. And we were the second state to adopt this law that took away local control. Since then, two other states have passed it as well. But if you look at what happened in Bisbee, what they did over there was pass a bill banning the use of plastic bags. And the state legislature said, we don't like that. We're going to take away everybody's right to ban plastic bags.
Right.
And when you share that with people, they get it. They go, oh, okay, you mean we can't stop it in Tucson or Marana or Tempe or Phoenix? And I said, no, you can't, not until we get this bill overturned. But the lobby has been so strong, Bill, so much money is made off these puppies. Remember, when you walk into one of these stores, they are going for $3,000 to $5,000. And
wow.
If you can't afford it, yeah, if you can't afford $3,000 to $5,000, they have a convenient loan program right there to sign you up, kind of like you're down at the furniture store, the appliance store. It's quick, it's easy. You sign up, you start buying the puppy on credit. It could take you years to pay it off.
Oh, I don't get it. We have so many wonderful animals available for adoption. We probably have per capita more animal welfare groups than any other city in the United States. So I just don't get it.
Well, we're going to try again, of course.
Okay.
And we're going to keep talking to folks. And that's where we need your listeners to understand that probably the most important thing they can do is go to the state website for Arizona State House and Senate. Type in who's my legislator, find out who they are, contact them and say, hey, I'm your constituent, I care. And then locally, we have two groups working on trying to talk about these specific issues. One is called SPEAK, S-P-E-A-K, and the other is called the Tucson Advocacy Team for Dogs, I believe. And both of these groups are very active in trying to get the word out about what is going on. And we are as well. We're here to help people, guide them towards some resources.
Keep us posted. We'll be checking in with you. I want to know about how this is going. Thank you, Nancy Youngwright.
Thank you so much, Bill, and we appreciate it.
And you want to do a quick plug for Rescue Me Marana? Go ahead, Nancy.
Of course I do. Yeah, we're out there to do dog and cat adoptions, and we want to connect people with bigger places than if they can't find what they want for us. So we can help them locate that harder to find so-called little fluffy is the most sought after dog. And we'd be happy to help anyone if they want to call us at 520-261 1616, or they can email us info@rescuemetucson.org, and then we can help them with our list of some resources they may not be available or may not be aware of to help them find what they're looking for in a rescue world.
Very good. Thank you, Nancy Youngwright. Good
Bill,
hearing from you.
Thank you. We always appreciate talking to you. Have a good day, sir.
You too. All right. We'll take a break right here. Bill Dolley is in the house. Dr. Bill Dolley is next from, he's our archaeology contributor, and we've got an environmental update for you right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion regional transportation plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show midweek edition. We want to tell our listeners that there is a wonderful place to go do some weekend recreation, or if you like to go over during the middle of the week, they would welcome you with open arms over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. What a great getaway. I love the Land of Enchantment, which I say is especially enchanting in the autumn. So really nice over there. They've been having temps. Oh, look at that. Going to be up around 70 as we get into the weekend, then cooling off a little bit. But great week, weekend weather to do some hiking. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. That's a great website. And take it from there. It's only about a three-hour drive. It will be well worth your time to visit there. Environmentalists are nervously watching how President-elect Trump will address our national parks and monuments. One area of concern is right here in the Southwest. It's the Bears Ears National Monument in Utah. It was established in December of 2016 by President Obama, who used a presidential proclamation under the Antiquities Act. But during the President Trump's first year in office, he slashed away 85% of bears' ears. Joining me in studio is Dr. Bill Doley. Bill is the president emeritus and senior advisor of Archaeology Southwest, which is a nonprofit organization based right here in Tucson. Dr. Doley, we're proud he is one of two dozen regular contributors to Buckmaster, and he is our contributor on, appropriately enough, archaeology. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm very good. It's nice to be here in the studio.
Yeah, it's always good to have you in studio. So refresh our listeners. Tell us about bear's ears and why it was established.
Well, bear's ears is up in southeastern Utah, and it's an absolutely gorgeous area to walk through, to travel through. There's a couple roads to go through it, but mostly it's very remote country, and you have to hike to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two buttes that, when you look at them from the distance, actually present themselves as looking like bear's ears from a distance. So that's where they get their name.
Mm-hmm.
And it is just full of archaeology, petroglyphs, pictographs, places that are so well preserved that they look like they were just, you know, left yesterday, but they're from 1,000 years old and much older. So it's a place where there's great archaeological values. There's major sacred values for native peoples, and there's been interest in protecting bear's ears since the 1940s in the Roosevelt administration, but finally in the 2014, the Navajo Nation and then Hopi, Zuni, and two Ute tribes came together as a bear's ears coalition to ask that President Obama declare bear's ears. They were asking for more than 1.35 million acres, but that's what President Obama established with his proclamation. So it's the first case of the Antiquities Act, which was passed in 1906, used to meet the request of native peoples.
Yeah, speaking of 1906, that's when I believe over in Silver City, the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument was part of that under the Teddy Roosevelt administration.
Yes, yep, Roosevelt did a number of them in the Southwest, and that was one.
So the scaled down version, when you eliminate a ton of acreage, right? What was basically left out of that?
Well, first of all, it was 1.35 million to start with, and then Trump split it into two small units that weren't even contiguous.
Wow!
So it wasn't a continuous landscape, and the protections, mining companies started to get interested as soon as that land was no longer had those prohibitions on it and so on.
Did they move forward with mining on that or no?
there were lawsuits right away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of slowed the pace at which, pushing new activities into the area. Mm-hmm. And after you established, Trump used the Antiquities Act to downsize a national monument.
It was used to create it originally and then now used to to downsize.
And that was the crux of all of these lawsuits. There's been modifications to national monument boundaries, but never an intentional, literally kind of desecration of the original concept like this.
Are you worried about even further downsizing?
I am. I think I have not read anything, specifically that it's on, number 391 on the activities of his first day, but there's a lot of concern that it was President Biden that restored bear's ears in 2021. And pretty much what I'm hearing is that anything that Biden reversed from what Trump did in the first round is on a list to be reversed.
So it was restored in 2021.
Yes.
So
yes.
The lawsuits, is that a state of Utah, or is this a state suit against, or are these individual organizations that
are
suing?
The original lawsuits in 2017, when Trump downsized, was actually the tribes within 3 hours of Trump making his proclamation. They had filed a lawsuit.
Okay.
And then Archaeology Southwest was on another group of seven nonprofits that sued later in the week, and another at the same time. So those lawsuits are actually still active. They never got resolved.
Mm-hmm.
So we have not had a decision from the courts as to, is it appropriate and legal for a president to use the Antiquities Act to downsize a monument. So that's an unresolved issue.
Could the Trump administration wipe out the Antiquities Act?
That's another that's another concern, yes.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, a law that's been used. Congress, delegated some of their powers to the president to make proclamations to protect these special places.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been used extensively ever since 1906 by both Republicans and Democrats. It's been in many ways kind of nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
But for quite a while now, it's been on the Republican presidential set of goals to repeal the Antiquities Act. So it's always a concern. My hope is that there's enough public interest in our public lands that, the national response would be major and extensive for a president taking on getting rid of the Antiquities Act.
At least there could be, rather than wipe it out or really dramatically downsize it, maybe consult with the First Nation tribes. And like you said, originally Trump had, there were two parcels that weren't really even connected. So maybe some input would be nice from the First Nations.
Yes. Yeah. and again, that's what is so special about Bears Ears.
Yeah.
There's been, once Biden reestablished the full-sized Bears Ears, there's been a 3-year process of creating a new monument management plan.
Okay.
And that was just approved very recently in September. And so there's all that work that the tribes, the BLM, and the public put into, how are we going to manage this? And it gave priority to the concerns of the tribes.
Well, I'm glad you could come on and tell us about this, give us an update. Tell us about your organization, Archaeology Southwest, here in the remaining less than a minute, Bill.
Okay. We're a nonprofit. We focus on the entire U.S. Southwest and down into Mexican Northwest. And we do what we call preservation archaeology. We're trying to bring the information and the values of archaeological resources and research to a broader public. And we try to protect places as well. You can find us on our website. It's www.archaeologysouthwest.org.
Or just Google Archaeology Southwest and it will get you to the right place. And you put out some great news items as well, and a very, very outstanding magazine that comes to subscribers that you put out monthly.
There's some previous ones on the Bears Ears that you can find on there that you might want to go back to.
Dr. Bill Doley, always a pleasure. Thanks, Bill. Great to see you. All right, folks, that'll wrap it up for the Buckmaster Show. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.